KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, we have a clear to partly cloudy sky. It's 37 degrees. We look for it to be partly cloudy today with a high of 72. Good morning. I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. The Creston Police Department reports numerous recent arrests. Late Sunday night, 30-year-old Christopher Willems of West Des Moines was arrested on a Union County warrant for two counts of a controlled substance violation and an additional charge of possession of a controlled substance, methamphetamine, third offense. Willems was being held without bond at the Union County Jail. At around 12 a.m. Sunday, 36-year-old David Estill of Creston was arrested for simple assault. He was cited and released on a promise to appear in court. Friday night, 29-year-old Seth Thompson of Creston was arrested for public intoxication. He was later released from the jail on a $300 bond. At around 5 p.m. Friday, Creston police arrested 26-year-old Dalton Cormini of Creston for driving while barred, possession of a controlled substance first offense, possession of a controlled substance second offense, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Cormini was later released on a $5,300 bond. Earlier that same afternoon, 52-year-old Richard Beam of Lorimore was arrested at the Union County Law Enforcement Center in Creston on a Union County warrant for failure to comply with his pretrial release on an original charge of domestic abuse assault by impeding air and or blood flow. Beam was later released on a promise to appear in court. Creston police said also a resident of the 500 block of West Mill Street reported Friday that sometime between the hours of 12 a.m. and 6 a.m. on Friday that someone had slashed the tires on a vehicle parked in front of the residence. The damage was estimated at $150. And that same morning, a resident of the 800 block of North Sycamore Street reported that someone had keyed her car between the hours of 12 a.m. and 6 a.m. on Friday. The damage there was estimated at $300. Well, the extended cold spring weather, has many people out looking to get outside and be active in the first sign of a warm day. Iowa DNR River Programs Outreach Coordinator Tom Robertson is worried some people may be in too big of a hurry to get out on the water.
We've had such a long, drawn-out winter that the water has never been given a chance to heat up at all. We've had no consistent warm days. So the big worry right now is people with the spring fidgets who've been cooped up all winter long just want to get out on the water as soon as possible.
Just having the sun's rays poke through the clouds and the air temperature rising, he says, is not enough to warm the water.
They see the first 60-degree day come along and they think that's the perfect time to go paddling, but they need to remember that the water is freezing.
And he says the water temperatures need to be up into the 70s in order to make it safe.
I don't know exactly what the temperature is, but I do know a good guess is probably in the mid-40s, and that is ice water. So that's definitely cold enough to cause hypothermia, and then you've got to factor in what the air temperature is, which is it's pretty cool. It's been very windy. All that combined is a very, very dangerous thing.
He says cold temperatures can combine with inexperience and improper equipment to become deadly.
If you don't have a wetsuit, you don't have a dry suit, and if you don't have proper boat control skills, that's why we're recommending that people just wait till it warms up a little bit before they head outside on the water.
There's also the issue with the uncertainty of water levels.
It just kind of depends on what stream you're at. Some are running normal, some are running a little low, some are running a little high. It just kind of depends on where you are in the state. Our precipitation recently has just been so scattered that it's just really hard to tell. So it's just something you gotta kind of plan for and look out.
Robertson says it's not worth the risk to your safety right now.
Right now it's just too darn cold to be messing around with kayaking and paddling, I think, until it warms up a little bit. And it's going to take several weeks of consistently warm temperatures and sunshine to get that water heated back up.
He says if you need something to do while you wait, you should take the time to check your canoe or kayak for any needed repairs or maintenance. Look for holes and leaks and make sure all hatch lids fit snug and securely, and check your paddle blades for signs of cracking or splitting. Dust off your life jacket as well and make sure all the buckles and zippers work properly. Look for holes and tears. You should replace the life jacket if it has damage that cannot be repaired. Well, if you've ever driven by an old, interesting house in Atlantic and wondered who lived there, you may be able to learn the history of a home during the special event this Thursday at the American Legion Building, or the Old Armory, here in Atlantic. Cass County Genealogical Society members Carolyn Key and Mary Hoig have been investigating the history of several homes. They'll share that information on Thursday, April 26th, that's this coming Thursday at 1 o'clock, at the American Legion Building at 201 Poplar Street. The houses they will describe are at 607 Maple, 702 Locust, 811 Poplar and 1314 Chestnut. Find out when those homes were built, the style and family histories of people who called them home. The program is part of the April theme for Atlantic's sesquicentennial entitled Who's Who in Atlantic. The county information will also be given out to sources and methods available to trace housing history, and Iowa's one of the few states requiring property abstracts. There are offices and records available to the public. The monthly meeting of the Cass County Genealogical Society is usually held on the fourth Thursday at the Atlantic Public Library. This Who's Who program is open to everyone at the American Legion Memorial Building. Elsewhere in state news, the Dubuque City Council is supporting plans to turn a crumbling 120-year-old brewery complex into apartments and retail space. The City Council members voted unanimously this month to support developer Stephen Emerson's application for state workforce housing tax credits for the project. The program gives tax benefits to developers looking to turn abandoned, empty, or dilapidated properties into housing. Emerson is president of the architecture and firm, a design firm Aspect Incorporated, which is looking to redevelop the brewery. He purchased the complex for $865,000 in 2017. Emerson said he plans to invest $30 million into the project. He's already acquired a federal redevelopment grant for the project and is pursuing state and federal historic preservation and new market tax credits. A riverfront amphitheater that draws thousands of people to downtown Des Moines will close for about 2 years to accommodate the construction of a bridge. The Simon Estes Amphitheater will be closed from 2019 to 2020. Bridge construction is expected to start in August and estimated to cost up to $9 million. The new bridge will replace the downtown Locust Street Bridge. No events will take place at the city-managed amphitheater during construction, according to Ben Page, director of Des Moines Parks and Recreation, who says there's not going to be any parking down there. It'll be a dusty, dirty mess. The 2018 Nightfall on the River concert series is typically held at the amphitheater and nearby Brenton Skating Plaza. Construction won't cause any of this year's events to be relocated, said Tim Leach, the senior vice president of Downtown Development for Des Moines Partnership, which manages the plaza. Leach says, "We don't think any of these closures are going to affect Nightfall." This year's concert series includes performances by a few groups, including the Nadas. The performances will be hosted at the Skating Park Plaza full-time when the amphitheater closes for construction. Well, federal authorities have charged a former Central Iowa High School educator who taught for 30 years with multiple child pornography counts. Federal investigators say 67-year-old Glenn Sedlacek of Marshalltown had numerous computer files containing pornography of children younger than 12, dating back to March of 2013. Sedlacek retired from the Marshalltown Community School District in 2010 after teaching instrumental music at the high school for three decades. He's been charged with distribution of child pornography and receipt and possession of minors engaging in sexually explicit conduct. Sedlacek has not yet entered a plea in the case. His trial has been set for early June at the federal courthouse in Des Moines. One person died, another was injured during a collision Friday afternoon in eastern Iowa's Benton County. The Iowa State Patrol says 90-year-old Arlene Arusha of Cedar Rapids was driving a 2014 Hyundai SUV when she attempted to cross Highway 30 while traveling north on 32nd Avenue when her vehicle was struck by a semi. Arusha died at a local hospital. The driver of the semi, 69-year-old William Butterfield of Tama, was injured and transported by ambulance to a hospital. Both drivers were wearing their seatbelts. The accident, which occurred at around 4:45 p.m. Friday, remains under investigation. Authorities say three people died in a two-vehicle crash in northeast Iowa that happened around 5 p.m. Friday at an intersection east of Charles City. A pickup driven by 28-year-old Jacob Allen Monasmith of Nashua ran a stop sign and collided with another pickup. Monasmith and a passenger in his truck, 28-year-old Shane Wiltsey of Charles City, as well as the driver of the other pickup, were killed in the crash. Authorities have not yet released the name of the third person who was killed. The patrol says 29-year-old Thomas John Parcher of Marble Rock, who was a passenger in the second truck, was injured in that collision. And residents in northeast Iowa are facing strong opposition from utility giant Alliant Energy as the community considers establishing a municipal utility in hopes of investing more in renewable energy. Decora residents hope to take millions of dollars built into the utilities rates and use the money for community projects and initiatives instead. The city has about 8,000 residents. The Decora Power Group is supporting a May 1st referendum that would encourage the city to explore the option. The group predicts that a municipal utility could save residents up to $5 million annually. Alliant says the group is underestimating the cost of creating a city utility. The company consultant says the municipal electric group would increase customers' rates by 30%. That's a check of the news on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.